So we're here on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, and we're up to what's called Ipusha Mochiach Iluye. So let's see if we could find the place. It's the last of the thin lines in the classical Gemara, and what this means is that the reason why we don't apply the principle of Basra and assume that what you find in this bread basket is certainly matzah, because most recently you've been baking matzahs and putting matzahs into this teva, is because Ipusha Mochiach Iluye. The very fact that there's Ipush, that spoilage, is itself indicative of the fact that this is an old bread. So that in the case of Basra, we have every reason to assume that since they clean out the streets of Yerushalayim on a daily basis, what you're looking at here is Basra. What you're looking at here is a coin that fell most recently. Not so in the case of a spoiled piece of pastry, because the spoilage itself indicates that a lot of time has passed. And the further back we go in time, the more indicative it is that it's chametz. And therefore we have to ask the question, well, what does he do with this basket? How does he use it during the entire course of the year? Does he use it mostly for chametz? Does he use it mostly for matzah? Again, you know, we live in a society in which, I don't know if anyone here, is anyone here in the room that eats matzah during the year itself?
Sometimes.
Often, or... Okay, but wouldn't you say that most of the meals, you know, maybe Phil, you're a matzah lover, or for dietary, whatever reasons you have, you eat matzah. You like matzah. Most people, I think, if you give them a choice between bread and matzah, they would prefer bread, I think, in most cases. So therefore, you would have said that, you know, there's no question that what you do, you know, if this basket is used for both chametz and matzah, it's definitely... Rove chametz, right? If you use it for both chametz and matzah, it would definitely be... That's not so back in the day, because back in the day, matzah and chametz were very similar. And as I mentioned to you a few days ago, the Yemenite matzahs look like pitot. I mean, the first time I saw it, I almost fainted. I couldn't believe it. The guy had a yarmulke on his face. We were in the botanical garden, and this guy's eating chametz on Pesach. I flipped out. So that's why I say that although there is obviously a distinction between chametz and matzah, even back in the day, but nevertheless it was so similar, it was hard to discern the difference, and they would eat matzah during the course of the year. I mean, matzah was so similar to chametz that they would eat matzah quite commonly during the course of the year. So now Rav wants to know, well, what does he mostly use it for? If he uses it mostly for matzah, for whatever reason, Then we assume that this piece is matzah. If he uses it during the course of the year mostly for chametz, we assume this piece is chametz. So Gemara says, well, why not assume it's matzah because most recently he's been putting matzah? And the answer is Ipusha Mochiach Alav. Since it's spoiled, it indicates that it comes from yesteryear, you know, from an earlier period of time. So now we want to look at the balance the whole course of the year and figure out what does he generally put into this teva. So the Gemara says, therefore, Iyapusha Mochiachale, if the fact that this Ipush means that it must have come from earlier, then Kirov so matzah maihi. What is Rav saying? Rav's saying that he's mostly using it for matzah. What do you mean he's mostly using it for matzah? Maybe now he's mostly using it for matzah. But let's assume that during the course of the year he uses it mostly for chametz. Rava is not talking about Rav Samatza, literally, meaning a number of days since he started baking matzahs and eating matzahs have passed already. Now, it's not like he finds this unidentified flying object, he finds it on the first day of Pesach. No, he finds it, let's say, on the fifth day of Pesach. So there's already many days of matzah. Now, what's the significance of the fact that many days of matzah have passed?
It's old.
So the spoil. Now I understand why it looks spoiled, because even the matzah spoils, right? You know, you think that matzah should be fresh because you're making matzah now, but the answer is it's already the fifth day of Pesach. and 5 days have gone by. Probably he was baking matzahs for a week before that or whatever it is. So enough time has passed by that the ipush, the fact that it looks so spoiled, doesn't prove a thing. So Gemara says, Ihachi, if you're telling me that many days have passed, is pshita. In other words, obviously the ipush is not a factor over here. It doesn't bother me either way. So if that be the case, then why not go basa basra? We should look at the last use of this, most recent use of this basket, right, of this table, and we should certainly assume that it's matzah. So again, we don't understand why Rav has to do somersaults in the air and come up with this rove and figure out what are you... Forget about all that. Let's look at basra. And certainly the last usages would have been for matzah. Not only that, if you remember, Rashi adds another element to the equation, namely that he was bodek his chametz, so he got rid of all his chametz. Certainly this is matzah. Why did Rav have to look for explanations and pin it on Rav? Why not just simply say that there's no indication that this is chametz, because the ipush is not an excuse for being chametz. The ipush here in this case, because so many days have passed since the beginning of Pesach, is something that you anticipate and it's normal even for matzah. Lo tzricha de ipusha meruba. It's not just ipush, it's not just the spoilage process has begun, but it's quite advanced. It's, you know, it's an advanced stage of ipush. And therefore, ma'u de tema, I would have said, kevan de ipusha meruba, since there's a very serious, you know, profound amount of spoilage here, iglai milsa, it reveals that vadai chametz ma'al yehu, it must be from before this period of time, before Pesach, earlier, because it's such a serious ipush, and therefore if I assume it's earlier, I'm going to assume that it was chametz, because most of what he does, he bakes during the course of the year is chametz. Kamash malon, the chiddush here of Rav is that came on since Sherabu Yimei Matzah Iluye, that a number of days of matzah have passed. Again, the number of days that have passed would not justify this very profound, advanced, intense state of Ipush, but Amrina, we have the following smart. This is what Rav is teaching us. Kol Yoma V'Yoma Nahama Chamima Ofa V'Shadi Iluye. Every day he bakes fresh, hot bread. Nahama is bread. Kol Yom Yom, every day. Chamima means it's hot. You know, warm bread that comes right out of the, in Yiddish we call it fresh gebacht, if you know what I mean, fresh baked bread. And what does he do? He puts it on top of the other breads, lying in layers, one on top of the other, in the teva. So what happens is, because of the heat of the warm matzah, it creates it speeds up in a very unusual way. It speeds up the spoilage process. I mean, we have to ask a physicist to give us all the physical things. But when you have heat, heat causes a speed. It speeds up the process of ipush. So again, there are only a few days of Pesach has passed. Normally, that amount of days that have passed would not be considered enough to have such a serious advanced spoilage. But in the case of hot bread, when you lay hot bread one on top of the other, then what happens is that the breads become very spoiled and very, very quickly. So that's what Rashi says over here, that Rabu Yimei Matzah, Rashi says, four lines up from the bottom, V'roi Lios Me'upash Mishenichnas HaPesach. Font. Oh. Now, at this point, the Gemara goes back to ask on the discussion earlier that we had about Maaser Sheni money, right? He finds coins in Yerushalayim, and we said that under certain circumstances, certain times and locations, we assume that it's Maaser Sheni. And basically, in Yerushalayim, we have a principle of Shvaki Yerushalayim, Asuyim L'Skabi B'chol Yom, and therefore we go Basa Basa, because all the old coins were cleaned out. So the Gemara asks, Umi Azlinin Basa Basra, is it really true? And the whole assumption of our sugya is that we look at the latest use of the streets of Yerushalayim. Vasanya, I have a brisa that contradicts this principle. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Teva Shenishtam Shuba. Yeah, interesting. Until now, we've been speaking about a teva for chametz and matzah. Now we're talking about a teva, which is a place where he keeps money. You know, it's like a piggy bank kind of thing. So what does he do? He has most chulin and he has most maaser, and he puts them into this teva. Now he looks at the teva, he takes out some most, and he gets confused. He doesn't know, is he looking at most chulin, which he's allowed to use for his personal purposes, or is he looking at most maaser, which he has to bring to Yerushalayim and use for achila itself and so forth. So the Braisa quotes Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda's ruling on this case, and he says it depends on Rov. Im Rov Chulin Chulin. If most of the most that he puts into this Teva are Chulin, then whenever he finds unidentified most, he can assume that these most, these coins are Chulin. Im Rov Meiser Meiser. So the Gemara asks, Amai, why does it depend upon Rov? We're looking at the general use over the course of a long period of time of this Teva. Lazel Basra Basra. Why not look at the last use? What, you know, ask the fellow, what were the last most that you put into this table? Did you put their most Meiser Sheni, or did you put their most of Chulin? So again, why are we looking at the Rov over the course of the entire year? We should look at the most recent use, which is called Basra, and forget about the Rov. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, and the Gemara gives three different answers to this question. What is Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda talking about in the Braisa? The first answer is Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak's answer. Hoch Ma'is Kinik Yon Shadish Tamshuba Mos Chulin Mos Meiser. The Eina Yodea Ezev Ed Basof. He really doesn't remember what was the last use. Did he put in Mos Meiser or Mos Chulin? You know, not everyone makes a notation for himself to remember exactly when and what he put into the teva. So he knows that as a general rule, he puts in both meiser money and also chulin money into this teva. And he doesn't remember what was the nature of the last most that he deposited in this teva. Rav Zvid Amar, he has a different way of interpreting Rav Yossi Rav Yehuda. Kigon shenish tamshu ba tziburin tziburin. What he does is he places coins piled one on top of the other into this teva. So he has, let's say, two piles, correct, of coins. And one of them is chulin, the other is maaser. Now he takes one of the coins and he doesn't know whether he took it from the column of coins on the right, which are maaser, or the column of coins on the left, which are chulin. So which pile did he take from? So since he doesn't know which pile that did he take from, then what he should ask himself is, where is the rov? So he doesn't know which one he took from. If on a general basis he usually uses, in other words, most of the most that he puts in there are most chulin, then he assumes that this mal that he finds, he doesn't know which arema came from, which pile it came from, he can assume it's chulin. If on the other hand, most of the coins that he puts into this teva are maaser sheni, then he can assume that the one he took is maaser sheni. We'll come back to this in just a minute. First, I just want to finish up the Gemara with Rav Papa. Rav Papa Amar ki go dishtakach beguma. He finds that inside this box, inside this teva, there are charitzim. Charitzim means indentations. And he finds a coin that fell into one of these indentations. So that normally, you can ask yourself, well, what was the last coin you put in? Because you assume that, you know, the coin that you find now belongs to that group of coins, that category of coins of the last use. But now he finds one hidden in a guma, inside what's the word in English for a guma? A hole, but is there a better word for it?
A groove.
A groove. Excellent. That's excellent. Groove. He finds it inside a groove. The fact that it was caught inside a groove means that it may have been there for a long time. So you remember that we had this principle of Basra, but whenever we have some indication that it's not recent, for example, Ipush, in the case of pastry, that indicates that it's from earlier. Now we have the case of Guma, where we assume that since it's trapped in a groove, therefore we assume that it was there for a long period of time. So the fact that more recently he used it for either this or that doesn't prove anything. I want to call your attention here to Rav Zvid, the previous answer, the middle answer, the three, and he says Siburin Siburin, which means he placed different piles of coins, categorizing them as either chulin or maser, and he doesn't remember which from which of these two piles of coins he took this ma. So the ma that he has in his hand, not like Rav Papa who says that the ma that we're talking about, the unidentified ma, is inside a groove. Not like Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak who says that he doesn't know when he last put in ma'os, you know, whether they were ma'os chulin. No, we're talking about a case where he has exactly a coin in front of him, but he doesn't know which of the two piles he took it from. So here we have a serious problem to understand Rav Zvid, because the Gemara in Masechta Ksubos and in many other places differentiates between, I'll explain this in a minute, meat that you found in the street and meat that you took from a place and you don't know where you took it from. So the Gemara says the following. Let's say you're in a city or in a district and it has 10 butcher shops. 9 of them are kosher and one of them is treif. And now you find a piece of meat in the street, you know, somewhere in the middle of this circle. And we apply the principle of rov, that since 9 out of 10 of the butcher shops are selling kosher meat, we assume that this is kosher meat. But then the Gemara says, what happens if I walked into one of these 10 stores, and then I walk out, I come home, and all of a sudden, I'm banging my head, I don't realize which of the butcher shops I went into. Now, Rabosai, if he doesn't know which butcher shop he went into, what are the chances that he went into a kosher butcher shop?
Same chance.
Right, 9 out of 10. So the Gemara says, no. In this case, we don't apply the principle of rov, but rather we substitute it with a principle called kavua. Look, I'll write that down on the board because we're going to have a lot to say about this principle called kavua. And kavua means, that's kuf beis vav ayin, kavua means set in its place. In other words, the first case is where he finds a piece of meat in the street. So the piece of meat was poresh, meaning it was taken out of the store. We don't know which butcher shop it was taken out of. So that, you know, we're talking about something that's in motion here, right? It's the motion, the movement that this piece of meat flew out, so to speak, of one of the stores, and we have to know where it flew out of. Okay. Now we have a case of kavua. Kavua means that our suffix is not on the meat itself, but on the butcher shop. In other words, the relationship between this piece of meat and the butcher shop, which butcher shop did it come from? If you're asking which butcher shop did it come from, so the butcher shops are not mixed up together. They are kavua. Each one is what's called nikar bimkomo. It's recognizable. And in such a case, rather than look at and count up individual butcher shops, we calculate categories of butcher shops. How many categories of butcher shops do we have? Only two. And that's called kimechza al mechza domi. Should I write that down? I just have to erase a little bit more because I ran out of space here. I don't know who's been writing so much on the board. Just kidding. And so kavua is kimechza al mechza. Okay, so you have 9 kosher, right? And you have 1 non-kosher. But we're going to define it, since it's called kavua, as kemechts al mechza. So al pidin, according to the halach, it's as if you have 5 and 5. That's called mechts al mechza, meaning 2 equal numbers. It doesn't matter what number you choose, but I started with the number 10, so if you break down 10 into 2 equal numbers, you get 5 and 5. So in this case, where he doesn't remember which store he went into, the suffix, the doubt in his mind, really begins the moment he steps out of the store. What store is he walking out of? Again, he may not realize it until he gets home that he forgot which store he went into, but once he realizes it, the suffix really is not on the piece of meat per se. He has to ask himself which butcher shop he went into and which butcher shop did he walk out of with a piece of meat. And that's called kemechts al mechza. So let me ask you the following question. If I have a coin in front of me, And I don't know if this coin came from this pile of coins or this pile of coins. That would be what? That would be rope. That would be called the parsh merubah parsh. But if I went in, I put my hand in, and I took out a coin, I just don't remember which one of the two piles I went into, what would that be called? Kol kavua kemechtzal mechtzal tamid. That should be 50-50. So why does the Gemara say here in the name of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, that it depends on Rov in this case, right? And the Gemara explains that the case is that he has two tziburin, he's got these two piles, and he doesn't remember which pile he went into, the one on the right, which is Chulin, the one on the left, which is Maser. That should be exactly parallel to the case of someone who goes into one of the butcher stores. And again, we don't count numbers anymore, we count categories. And once you calculate in categories, it's called Kemechtzal Mechtzal Domi. Yeah, go ahead, Don.
I know we said yesterday that Rove doesn't depend upon logic, statistics, but I'm not copying it here. I mean, you know,
so
what difference does it make if I find it?
Let me give you an answer to your question that I hope will satisfy you. But what I'm going to tell you is I have to tell you honestly because I'm an honest guy. It's not right.
Okay.
But if it convinces you and makes you happy, so it's good. It's not really right. What I'm going to tell you is the following. Don, you don't have a dog, do you?
No.
Imagine does. If you did have a dog.
My daughter does.
Okay. Now, if I would ask you the following question. You want to feed your dog meat. And there are two butcher shops that you have in front of you. One is selling kosher meat and the other is non-kosher meat. Which butcher shop are you going to go into?
Makes no difference.
I'll tell you why you're going to go into the non-kosher butcher shop. It's a lot cheaper.
Okay.
Now, I have a dog, and I buy meat for my dog. I have a family to feed, and I buy meat for my family. When I buy meat for my dog, I go into the non-kosher butcher shop. When I buy meat for my family, I go into the kosher butcher shop. Simply for financial reasons. There's nothing more. This has nothing to do with frumkeit. It's just a matter of...
Right, okay.
Oh. I don't remember which butcher shop I went into.
Either one of them.
Again, there are nine kosher butcher shops. It's one trade for butcher. I don't remember. I come home. I open up my package of meat. Which butcher shop did I go into? Is there a greater a statistical probability that I went into a kosher butcher shop because there are nine kosher butcher shops?
No, wait. I'm not getting the facts. I have two pieces of meat in front of me. I don't remember either one of them were.
No. Again, I'm coming home with a package. It's okay. Got one piece of meat in it.
Okay.
Now I'm asking myself, which butcher shop did I go into? There are 10 butcher shops.
So why did I buy the meat? For my dog?
So what are the statistical probabilities? Did you buy it for your family or did you buy it for your dog? I simply don't remember.
Okay.
So why is it 50-50? Well, wait a minute. There are nine kosher butcher shops. He but there's a 90% chance that he went into a kosher butcher shop. Am I right?
Yeah.
I'm wrong. Why? Because he's either buying for his family and he's going to pay the price,
right,
or he's buying for his dog. That's a 50-50 chance.
I agree there.
And he got a big dog. You know, it's like a polar bear kind of dog.
But the
dog eats a lot of meat.
But here there's an extra factor.
Yeah.
The extra factor is that I buy for my dog one kind of meat, and for me a different kind of meat.
No, it all looks the same. There's no badatz hechsher on it. Do you understand? That's a problem. It's an unidentified piece of meat.
I understand that, but in that case, there is a reason why I'm going into the non-kosher. In the first example, I wasn't buying for a dog. I was buying for me. I just can't remember whether I went into the kosher one or the non-kosher one. I know I was going to go into the kosher one if I did it with consciously. So why should
I?
Well,
I lost you somewhere along the line. What are the two cases?
I have no dog.
Oh, you have no dog.
Right? I'm buying meat for my family.
Right.
Right? I go in, I buy the meat, right? And I come home, which is likely in my day and age right now. I can't remember which butcher shop I went to. But there's nine kosher and one non-kosher. Statistically, Rove, chances are I went into the kosher one because I'm buying meat for myself. Consciously, I would go into the kosher one. I just can't remember whether I accidentally went into the non-kosher. So the chance is still 9-1. It's not 50-50.
Right. Then you might be right. But
how's it been?
I don't think the reality is such that you would have just dribbled into a butcher shop. You know, you for the last 50 years you've been buying meat. So if you're very, very, what we call an absent-minded professor, maybe you just rolled into a butcher shop. That's not my assumption. My assumption is you made a deliberate decision to go into one of two categories of butcher shops. Categories. You either would go into a category that's kosher or non-kosher. Do you follow my point?
Yeah.
And it's a lot cheaper to go into the non-kosher butcher shop, but it's not going to help your family because they can't eat the meat. But it's great for my big German shepherd. He loves meat, but why should I spend the extra money on kosher meat? He's not that frum, my dog. He eats trefa meat, which is fine. You're allowed to feed trefa meat to a dog, right? They're like, Helen Tashlichen also, the Torah said. You see what I'm saying?
That
the majority of this beefed up number that I gave you of 9 kosher butcher shops is totally irrelevant in this case. He made a deliberate decision to go either to a kosher butcher shop and pay twice the price, or go to a non-kosher butcher shop, feed his dog, and pay half the price. That was a deliberate decision. He just doesn't remember. Because maybe in the same day, in the morning, he went in to buy meat for his dog, and then a few hours later he gets a WhatsApp from his wife, hey, don't forget to bring some meat home for the table. Now he comes home and he says, wait a minute, which store did I go into? You know,
yeah,
so that's called Kimak Talmud.
Okay.
Okay then? Now, what would be in your case? Now you're talking about a case where, in a certain sense, he randomly rolled into a store. So maybe that would be called the Parsh Merubin Parsh. Maybe Yanyo Hanami, in that case, if he just randomly, they blindfolded him. They played a game with him. They blindfolded him. They said, you go buy me.
But that's not reality. Reality is I'm from all my life.
Correct.
Chances are I'm going to consciously go to a kosher place. I happen to be in a town where there's 9 kosher and 1 non-kosher. Right? I go, and I'm buying meat for my family. I'm on vacation. Right. So, and then I come home and I forget. Did I go into the kosher one or non-kosher?
That's not realistic. Why would you go into a non-kosher place?
Exactly. But so I'll give you a different example. So I'm recently became frum. Baal tshuva. I'm only Baal tshuva for about a year, but I'm trying to keep kosher. Same example. I'm on vacation with my family. Non-kosher one, non-kosher. Yeah, maybe the circumstances are a little different, but if I'm
so maybe in that case, Rove would work. If again, that's a random selection. What I'm saying is that Kol Kavuk Mechtal Mechtzadami is when there's a human deliberate decision, and when there's a human deliberate decision, he just doesn't remember which decision he made. It's a 50-50 issue because either he's buying kosher meat or he's buying non-kosher meat. You're giving me a reality in which he randomly goes into a store, and El Chinami, if he didn't check out the labels on the store, he was on a trip to Europe or something, whatever. And then we go by statistical, then maybe Rove would work. But what I'm saying is, I'm trying to justify this kemechtza mechtza. The man comes home, he doesn't know where this meat came from. He bought the meat, he went into a butcher shop, paid good money for it, doesn't remember which butcher shop he went into. So I ask you the question, there are 9 kosher butcher shops. Doesn't that prove that he went into, 90% chance that he went into a kosher butcher? And the answer is no. Because when a human decision is relevant, then he will deliberately choose between two categories. And therefore it's kemechtzal mechtzadon. Okay, I thought you'd be happy with that. When I heard this, you should know, when I was much younger, I loved it. I mamish ate it up like a good kosher piece of meat. But with the passage of time, I realized that it doesn't hold water, because the many cases where the Gemara applies this principle of kol kavuk mechtzal mechtzadami, where it seems to be just a random selection. Like, for example, the Gemara is going to say in Makkos that if you throw a stone, and we're not sure who you hit, and there are 9 Jews and 1 non-Jew, and so forth. So we're going to apply kol kavu kemechtzal mechtzad. I mean, there again, it wasn't a deliberate decision. He just threw a stone into a mass number of people. So if it's a random selection, why are you going to say it's kemechtzal mechtzad?
I understand Rashi. Why does Rashi say yom echad for the end? Is that easy? He has to do it.
I don't know. What is? I was wondering about that.
Is he coming to say that you have that? You took out 2 coins then. Maybe he had 2 piles, and he took out 1 Maisa and 1 Chulin.
Is that the case?
I think that's what he's saying. Look at what Rashi's saying. He's saying, Shal Maisa b'zavazu, v'shal Chulin b'zavazu, uv'yom echad. He did it both. Took one from each on the same day. I think that's what I'm not sure that it helps us anything, Penny. But
I honestly thought that to be omechad here, that Rashi is saying that we're not dealing with the passage of time. If we're dealing with the passage of time, you would ask me the question, well, what was the last use? And then we would go basra basra. Rashi wants to neutralize the issue of basra here by saying we're on Yom Echad. He doesn't know whether he took from this pile or that pile. In any event, most of the Mefarshim for sure, and he has a whole list of them, they assume that he took from one of the two piles. He just simply doesn't remember which pile he took from. Now, if that be the case, that's a classical kavua in which we apply the principle of kemechta mechta dami. The fact that there are more, let's say he has two piles, right? The meiser pile is a little bit shorter, a little bit smaller than the chulin pile. That's irrelevant. He's choosing either meiser money to buy a behemah for shlomim, or he's choosing chulin money because he wants to go and spend the money. There are two categories, and therefore it should be kemechta mechta.
So what's kavua in any
case? I'm going to help you here with your ritzua. My father was very makpid on this. That you should, the ritzua should be here. It's not working. Okay.
What's kavua? It's not my decision, but the butcher shop. If there would be 9 kosher butcher shops and 1 peddler, since the peddler is sometimes...
What's a peddler? There. I'm sorry, I'm American.
Someone comes...
Traveling.
Comes occasionally. Sometimes he's there, sometimes he's not.
Oh, you mean sometimes the butcher shop is open and sometimes
he's
not?
No. He's in the cart. He's got his meat on a store.
Right. We're not talking about the person who has the stuff. You're talking about the seller, the vendor.
Yeah, so that's always the principle that the butcher shop has to become one.
Yes. Yeah. I would say so. If, let's say, you had a traveling butcher shop, like your case of the peddler, then that would be called the Parsh Meruba Parsh. Which is another indication that Rove works with his, with set rules. Like, for example, you remember I said to you yesterday that somebody came out of the city and raped a woman, and we don't know if the person came out and raped her was a Jew or a non-Jew. You remember that? So what happens if a person goes into a house, and we're not sure which house he went into to implement that terrible action of rape. So then the Gemara says, "Kol kavua kemeftzal meftz." It doesn't matter how many Jews and how many non-Jews are in the city; it's always going to be considered 50-50. So that's called kavua. Why? Because he went into the house, and you're not sure which house he went into. Something like that. Okay, Rabbi, so we're now going to start a new sugya, and I'm very, very excited because I love this sugya. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Let's first make sure we're all together, 3 lines up from the bottom of Daf Zayin, Amar Aleph. Habodek Tzarech Sheyivarech. That a person who recites Bedika, a person who is about to start his Bedika, recites a Bracha before he begins his Bedika. Now, from this point on, the Gemara is going to analyze exactly what the bracha should be. And we'll get into that in just a moment. But first, I want to ask you a question. Why does Rabbi Yehuda feel compelled to tell me that Habodek Tzarech Sheyivarech? Meaning, whenever the Gemara quotes an Amora, methodologically, we should ask the question, Pshita Mai Kamashma, what chiddush are you telling me? What would I have thought otherwise? And in this case, we have a rule, which the Gemara quotes later on in Pesachim, and in many other Mesugis and Shas, that Kol HaMitzvos Kulon Mevarech Aleihem Over Lasiyosan. That's a double statement. Number one, it means that every mitzvah requires a bracha. And number two, the bracha should be recited before the mitzvah. That's called over lasiyasa. Why, again, I'm trying to figure out, there's sort of like a phantom antagonist here. I don't know who he is, I can't identify him, but if he was speaking to me, I would try to hear what he's saying. Why would he, as an antagonist, say, no, habodek ein tzarech levar? Meaning, why would I have a havamina to say that maybe bedikas chametz does not require a bracha?
Because maybe it's a machshim. You're preparing to do the mitzvah.
Excellent. So what else?
Well, it's a long process. You might not complete it.
Excellent. Very good. Okay. So again, The two answers that you give in Gershon and Asher are very similar. Meaning maybe it's only in football we call it a kickoff, it's only the beginning. This is not really the mitzvah. You know, maybe it's a hasher mitzvah, you know, it's a preparatory stage. The real mitzvah is burning the chametz. The Torah says tashbisu. You have to check and look and find the chametz before you destroy it. But that's just a technical hash. Oh, another answer. Maybe he won't find anything. And then now we get into the whole issue. What happens if you don't find anything? Did you fulfill the mitzvah? Did you not fulfill the mitzvah? So I gave out today a rush. I actually made a little bit of a mistake giving out my own copy of the rush, so I didn't leave myself a copy. If anyone has a Gemara Pesachim that I could borrow, or I could borrow those pages that I gave out, that would be... Nobody has a just one of these classical Gemaras, you know.
This one?
Yeah, can I borrow that, Gershon? I'll give it right back. You have a copy of the Rush, at least to look on with, so then I'll borrow this. Okay. Thank you, someone. So I gave you two pages, and again, if anybody, you know, wants to make the extra, you know, the extra effort and photocopy, because I only made a few copies from my home printer. But it's a cinch over here, you know, just a few feet away from us we have a photocopy machine. And this is the Rush in the first pack of Psachim, Simon Yud. Omar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav Habodek Tzarech Shivarech. Are you able to follow inside those who have a copy? Yeah? Omar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav? Here, I'll show you where it is, Philip. Oh, you found it? Right on the top of the page. Take it from the top. Says the Rosh.
Doesn't say that in the Gemara.
What doesn't say in the Gemara?
Wait, give it in the Rush.
Just 1 second. Give this to me, Phil.
No, he was looking in the Gemara. I see it here. It's here.
Yeah, oh, it's here. So
in the Gemara, it just says Amar Rabbi Yehuda.
Oh, okay. So we have different yourselves, whether Rabbi Yehuda was quoting Rav or he said it in his own name. Says the Rosh. Delo Tema, what does Delo Tema mean? Right? That you shouldn't say the following. You know, he's coming to answer the question, what should you not say? Meaning, what would you have said? Eina kol kach mitzvah. Strange language, a little bit ambiguous. Eina kol kach mitzvah. It's a little bit of a mitzvah, but it's not such a mitzvah. Kevon di eino elo levayer es hachametz min habayis. What is the mitzvah?
Beer.
Bedikah is not the mitzvah. Okay. Now, the one who comments on this, which again, we have it in our shelves here, but I didn't get a chance to photocopy it, is the Rav Shulchan Aruch. And he writes, HaBodek Tzarech Shivarech, Delo Tema, and again, the Rav Shulchan Aruch lived about 2.5 centuries ago, but there are Rishonim, especially the Ritva, that seem to indicate this many, many centuries before the Rav Shulchan Aruch, that Bidika is a losaser and not an essay. V'ein mevarchan al losas. So let me explain. We make a bracha only on a positive mitzvah, right? All the mitzvahs of the Torah can be divided into two categories. One is positive mitzvahs called mitzaseh. I think in English they call it the do's. And then the mitzvahs lo saseh, which means be passive and don't violate the will of the Torah. That's a do not. So the Rav Shulchan Aruch now opens up the following question. And this question is going to be, the two possible answers to this question is going to be the Hava Mina before Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav and the Maskot of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. What is Bidika? Is Bidikas Chometz a lotaseh? We're trying to avoid a lotaseh. Or is Bidikas Chometz an essay? If you go back to the beginning of Masechta Pesachim, we have Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi holds that the purpose of Bidika is to avoid Bal Yiroh Bayim Motzei, and Tosfos says to avoid achila. He might come to eat the chametz. What's common to both Rashi's understanding of Bedika and Tosa's understanding of Bedika? It's a losas. So the Rav Shulchan Aruch says, and again, I think he was preceded by the Ritva, and believe that if you remind me, I'd like to bring in the text so we see it inside, that Bedika doesn't deserve a brach. Bedika is the way, is the method by which I avoid violating a losas. And he gives the following example. There's a halacha called Bedika Simonim. The Rambam in Hilchos Shechita has a whole chapter dedicated to Bedika Simonim. It means that sometimes you get a part of an animal, or maybe, you know, the hooves of the animal, whatever, something was destroyed in the animal, and you don't know whether it's a kosher animal or a non-kosher animal. So you look for simonim. There are certain simonim that will tell you whether it's kosher or not kosher. He gives another example. We have a halacha called bedikas toloim, that if we have food and we have, there's reason to worry about the existence of bugs, then you have to check for bugs. So this concept of bedika, of checking, is not limited to chametz. We have bedikas toloim, we have bedikas simoni kashrus. We never found a bracha on bedika, says the Rav Shulchan Aruch. You know why? Because it's a lotas. We don't want to eat a non-kosher animal. We don't want to eat toloim. And whenever we're trying to avoid a violation of a lotaseh, as important as that is, that'll be the subject of my chumash class this morning at 10:40 if anybody wants to come, but it's very significant to avoid a lotaseh, but we don't make a bracha. A bracha is only on a mitzvah saseh and not on a lotaseh. And you can go into, or somebody will put in front of you a non-kosher piece of meat, and the Torah says, don't eat it. You're not going to make a bracha. There is no such bracha. There's only a bracha to do an asiya. And the Rav Shulchan Aruch takes this one step further. Sometimes I may have to do an asiya, an action, in order to avoid the violation of a losas. If I don't do my bedika, I'm going to eat tolaim. If I don't do bedika, I might end up eating a non-kosher meat. If I don't do bedika, I violate Bayura Bayamatze, or I might even come to eat the chametz chas v'shalom, right? So we're trying desperately to avoid a violation of a lotas. We may have to do an action, but the action is geared towards the salvation, the protection from a violation of a lotas. In such a case, there's no bracha. Says the Rav Shulchan Aruch, Kamashvul, and this is the great chiddush of Rav Yehuda Maram, the Chachamim, in the case of chametz, did something that they never did before. Not in the case of toloim, and not in the case of kashrus. They created a mitzvah of bedika, a mitzvah unto itself. And this mitzvah, the Gemara is going to derive, has to be Bi'or HaNer, and the Gemara is going to have psukim to teach you that's Bi'or HaNer. This is what the Rabbanan did. And then the Rav Shulchan Aruch adds another piece. And he says, V'lo tema, and don't say that the Havamina was that bedika is only a mitzvah derabbanan, and therefore it doesn't get a bracha. Don't tell me that Rav Yehuda Maram is teaching me that despite the fact that this is only a rabbinic mitzvah, nevertheless it gets a bracha. That's wrong. Why is that wrong? I don't need Rav Yehuda Maram for that. Who can help me here? Well, no, you're already giving me the answer, but give me a proof. You know, if I need a proof that you make a bracha even on a mitzvah derabbanan, that whether the mitzvah is d'oraisa or d'rabbanan is irrelevant as far as the bracha. So that's David?
Hanukkah lighting?
Excellent Hanukkah lighting, Osher. Okay, that's good, but I thought you were going to say something that we learned this morning. Megillas Esther,
yeah.
Right? Megillas Esther, right? Just like you have Ner Hanukkah, you have Megillas Esther. So we do make a bracha on it, d'rabbanan. The Gemara has, as we learned here in this room not that long ago, a whole sugya, how can you make a bracha on a mitzvah d'rabbanan? Heichan tzivanu, and then the Gemara gives the various answers, asisa kol shayiruch, kol otaser, etc., etc. So the chiddush of Rabbi Yehuda Marav could not be that you make a bracha on a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Because that I know. How do I know that? That you make a mitzvah on d'rabbanan? So David says, I know it from Hanukkah. And Asher says, I know it from the Netilas Yadayim or from Megillah. Can you give me a better example? Now, the bdika is done on the 14th. So let's fast forward just 24 hours. And I'm going to give you another example 24 hours late on the 15th of Nisan of a bracha on a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Don't all answer at once.
Here.
24 hours later, on the night of Pesach, we're going to make a bracha on a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Maror, excellent, Reuven. Shkoya, thank you. I was getting very nervous because no one was talking about Maror. Maror on a Doraisa level is only obligatory within the framework of what?
The carbon.
The carbon Pesach. And all the Rishonim, with the exception of one Rishonim, his name was Rabbeinu Daniel Abavli. He's the only one. It's a Pella how to work that out. All the Rishonim say that Maror depends upon the Karban Pesach. If you have the Karban Pesach, there's a mitzvah d'oraisa to eat Maror. If you don't have the Karban Pesach, there's no mitzvah minat Torah to eat Maror. Our mitzvah to eat Maror is only derabanan. So if I wanted to prove that you make a bracha on a mitzvah derabanan, asher kidshanu mitzvosu mitzvot al achilas Maror. In any event, we have many examples, many precedents that prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that we make a mitzvah, a bracha on a mitzvah derabanan, asher kidshanu mitzvosu. So it can't be that Rabbi Yudah Rav is telling me that despite the fact that Bedinka is a mitzvah d'rabbanan, I make a bracha, because that I know without Rabbi Yudah Rav. And the answer is one of two answers, either the Rosh's answer or the answer of the Rav Shulchan Aruch. What was the halavina that we would leave out a bracha on Bedinka's chametz? It's either A, because Bedinka is not a mitzvah, it's only a hechatimtz, it's only setting up the biur, or alternatively, the purpose of Bedinka is to avoid a violation of what? Of a lotus. And we never make a bracha on the avoidance of a lotus. If you go with the Rosh, the Karmash, well, it is that Bedinka is a mitzvah if they ask for, and if with Jerry, you ask the question, what if I don't find any chametz? And the answer is, I don't care whether you find chametz or not. What's the goal of Bedinka?
Make sure
as a separate mitzvah. Not to destroy the chametz, but to guarantee yourself that your house is chametz free. That's what we call a cheskas baduk, if you remember the Gemara back on the Aftalon Amid Beis. And once I, that's this minhag, which is based, by the way, on the Arizal, that you put out 10 pieces. Don't misunderstand the Ari. I don't think for a minute the Ari thought that if you don't find chametz, then your bedika is meaningless and your bracha is a bracha matal. That's not what he means. It has to do with Kabbalistic notions about the 10 spheros. I don't know what it is. But even if you bodik your house and you don't find a single scratch of chametz, your wife did a great job. Appreciate your wife's good work. You are yotze the mitzvah bedik. There's no need to find chametz. Bedik is a mitzvah unto itself, and that's the way the Rosh is learning. The Rav Shulchan Aruch is saying something totally different. He's saying that the chiddush of Rabbi Yehuda is that don't define bedikas chametz as a classical bedika. And a classical bedika is just to avoid a lo saseh, but rather there's a mitzvah of bedika, a positive command to be bodik the chametz. Here's another nafkamina. If you know any chassidim who got a mikvah before they do a mitzvah, would you got a mikvah before bedikas chametz? In the havamina of the Rav Shulchan Aruch, the answer is no. I don't have to go to the mikvah before I check toloy. But if in the Maskana, Rabbi Yudah Rav says that the reason why Bedika deserves a brach is because Bedika's chametz is a mitzvah, then go to the mikvah before. And that's what we're going to do. So Rabosai, now it comes out that the chiddush of Rabbi Yudah Rav is a great chiddush. And it's not just that we read a line in the Gemara, Abodik Tzarek Shivarech. But Abodik Tzarek Shivarech means that Bedika's chametz is a mitzvah, and therefore gets a brach. But let's ask the following question. Supposing he's bodek chametz, and he finds chametz. He's bodek the house, and he finds chametz. Has he completed his mitzvah?
No.
What does he have to do? He has to destroy the chametz. No, in that case, we have two actions that form a process. Part one and part two. There's bedika and then there's biur. If that be the case, Rabosai, what happens when you have a two-part process? Should you make the bracha on the first process, the first part, the first action, or on the last action?
What about the fact that there's a hefsek?
Can anyone think of any examples? What?
What about the fact that there's a hefsek?
maybe that also could complicate things, you know, that you make a bracha on the night of the 14th and you fulfill the mitzvah. The ultimate key of the mitzvah is when you burn the chametz. How many hours later, shall we call it? 15 hours later, whatever it is. A little bit more than 12 hours later. Very strange. I'm not sure that the bracha should be at the moment of bedikah. In fact, I want to support my thesis. Again, my thesis is incorrect, but I want to support it as a logical thesis that the mitzvah is destroying the chametz. Because take a look at the next line in the Gemara. And the Gemara says, "My mevarech." And the Gemara says, "Rapapa mishmei derava levayer chametz." Our nusach is, as we'll see later in the Gemara, "I'll be your chametz." But whether you take Rapapi or Rapapa, it's on, the nusach habrach is on the beer chametz. According to the Rosh, or according for that matter to the Rav Shulchan Aruch, if the chiddush of Rabbi Yudam Arav is that we're dealing with a mitzvah saseh, albeit the Rabbanim, but a positive mitzvah unto itself of bedika, and even if I don't find any chametz, I fulfill that mitzvah, then why is the nusach habrach on the beer chametz? Ah, the answer is because bedika is stage one. It's part of the mitzvah, but it's not the ultimate mitzvah. The ultimate mitzvah requires beer chametz, and therefore the nusach is going to reflect beer chametz. Now watch this. The mitzvah is beer chametz. The nusach habrach is beer chametz. There's also a mitzvah bedikas chametz. Now we're going to make a bracha on the bdika, but the nusach habracha is going to be al bir chametz. Very strange. And I draw you the following conclusion, Rabbi Moshe. I don't know how to support this conclusion. In other words, I'd love to bring analogies and proofs, but I don't have them right now in my pocket. But what I see here is that if you have a two-part mitzvah, then you're going to make a bracha on the first action, even though that first action is only stage one. It's going to lead me to a second action when I finally clinch and complete the mitzvah. It could be the nusach habracha will reflect the clincher in the kiyumah mitzvah, but the bracha is going to be on the first action. Two actions. Bedika and beer, the bracha is going to be on bedika, even though the nusach habracha is on the kiyumah mitzvah. Because bedika without beer, if you find chametz, That's not going to do it. You have to destroy it. Yeah, David?
Is it like when you put on tefillin in the morning, that the bracha on the yad doesn't say the word mitzvah, but the rosh you say mitzvah tefillin.
Wait, I lost you. That on the shal yad you don't say.
You say la niyah.
The word mitzvah.
Well, not mentioned. Well, what do you say? Oh. So I mean, instead of saying asher kitshana. In addition to mitzvosa, he should say al mitzvos hanochas tefillin or something like that. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It's one.
You know, that's a question unto itself. I mean, that's a valid question. I don't know why the nusach habracha is. It's lehaniach. One second. I think your kash is really on Tefillin Shel Rosh, not on Tefillin Shel Yad. Meaning Tefillin Shel Yad, I think, let's think it out loud, is classical.
It says
right? It
says
okay. No, just one second. No, he's talking about why it says Al Mitzvah Tefillin, right? Is that what you're asking?
I'm not saying what. I'm saying I'm noticing the fact that it's a
two-part Al Mitzvah Tefillin.
It's a two-part mitzvah.
So again, I would say, David, your kash is on Shel Rosh, meaning If you take the classic pattern of a nusach habracha on a mitzvah, it never says al mitzvah. So it says al this, al that, you know, whatever the vice of mitzvah is. It doesn't say al mitzvah is that. So your question is on the nusach habracha of tefillin shel rosh. Why is it al mitzvah tefillin? It should be on hanochas tefillin. Maybe because we want to change the nusach habracha instead of repeating the same nusach for al. But anyway, it's a good question.
I thought it was two separate mitzvahs.
For sure. So, but why would you make a bracha on every bracha reflects the action of the mitzvah. That's called over lasiyosan. So David is asking, you know, bishleim etvilin shel yad, that fits into your classic pattern. Asher kitzonim tzos is funu lehaniach, right? Lito or lishma kol shofar, whatever the action is, lechol es matzah, lechil es matzah. But it doesn't say al mitzvah achilas matzah. You know, we don't repeat the word mitzvah a second time. Asher kitzonim tzos of. That's enough to say mitzvah. So, again, you know, it's a good question, but I don't know if it's so relevant to us. Now, I was asking a different question. I was asking, if you find a mitzvah, and it's a composite mitzvah, a compound mitzvah. It's made up of two different actions. And the first action is the beginning of the mitzvah. The second action is the end of the mitzvah. If you found such an example, and I think we have one right here, would you make the bracha on the first maisa or on the second maisa? And the Gemara comes up with a very strange compromise. That you make the bracha on the first maisa, but the nusach ha-bracha is going to reflect the second maisa, the final.
So I'm going to suggest that the nusach connects the two parts.
Right. But so is there, is there a precedent for this?
The reason,
you know,
for the bracha is over the
right.
So what
is there a precedent?
Was there a bracha for when they went to Israel and they did Bedikas Avodah Zarah? And they had a mitzvah to do the around.
So that's a good question, but I'm just saying the following question. Let's assume there was a bracha. Again, I'm just to give you a saber to ozen. There was no bracha, but let's assume there was a bracha. Would the bracha be on Bedika or would the bracha be on Bira? That's my question. When they check the houses to look for Avodah Zarah, did they make the bracha before the checking or did they make the bracha when they destroy the Avodah Zarah that they found?
What's the mitzvah?
So the mitzvah is on a Doraisa level Bira, on a Drabana level Bedika. Bedika is the mitzvah in order to get to Bira. But it's all part of one mitzvah. And therefore, if you have a two-part mitzvah, the question that we have to ask is, when should you make the bracha and what should be the nusach bracha? So Jerry says very well that we'll make this following compromise. We're going to make the bracha at the beginning of the asiyah. We don't want to cut out the beginning asiyah stage one from the bracha. We want that to be included in the bracha. But the nusach bracha is going to be all encompassing and mention the kiyumah mitzvah. What I was asking you, this is what I was hoping that you could answer because I don't have an answer. Do we have a precedent for such a thing? Is there a case of a mitzvah that has two parts to it and we make a brach on that mitzvah? So it's interesting. The Avudraham has a havamina that we should make a brach on Dalid Kosos. And he wonders why we don't make a bracha. And he comes to the following conclusion. He says the following. He says, when are we going to make the bracha? If we make the bracha before the first kosos or the four kosos, well, he still has three more kosos to finish. So the first kosos is not a mitzvah. If, on the other hand, he makes a bracha before he drinks the fourth kosos, then the first three kosos were not included in his bracha. So therefore, ein levarach. So the Avodram lived about 6 centuries ago. He was one of the late Rishonim. And he came to the conclusion that the reason why there's no bracha shar kinshonim v'tzosu v'tzimoto lishtos dalid kosos is because we don't know how to institute such a bracha. We're in a technical bind. Let me go over his logic one more time. If you're going to make the bracha before you drink the first kos, well, that doesn't guarantee the mitzvah. He still has another three kosos to drink. Let him make the bracha right before he drinks the fourth kos. He says, but then he's not making a bracha on four kosos. He's only making a bracha on one kos. And he has to make a bracha on all four kosos. So it seems that from the Avudraham, if you have a mitzvah that's made up of many parts, you really have a serious issue here. How do you solve the problem of, on the one hand, making the bracha at the beginning of the mitzvah, but on the other hand, if you make the bracha at the beginning of the mitzvah, then that bracha is sort of suspended in midair because you still have so many different actions that you need to implement before you fulfill the mitzvah. And if, on the other hand, you suspend the bracha until the final action when you clinch the mitzvah, then the bracha does not encompass the first section or the first segments of the mitzvah. So this is a real issue, you know, when you have a two-part mitzvah. When should you make the bracha? Yeah, Phil, I know you have something to say. I'm just trying to clear my brain for a second. What about the case of bikurim? Let's just think. You have bikur bikurim, and you have havas bikurim, or hanoch al gabi mizbeah. Let's think about the four avodos. So you have four avodos, so you can make the bracha before the shechita. If you make a bracha on the shechita, then how is the bracha going to be chal on the zrikas adam? You follow what I'm saying? I'm throwing out the following issue that you have a multifaceted mitzvah that requires many maisim.
and it's not, and you haven't fulfilled it until you do Zerika Zadam. If you do a Shechita and you didn't do Zerika Zadam, the Shechita was no good, right?
I don't know if the Shechita was no good, but certainly you didn't. You weren't Mekayim the mitzvah of Avodas HaKorban, right?
I'm saying the
you didn't. So that again. So I'm just saying. I'm throwing out. You know, again, we're running out of time. But just if you gentlemen would like to think together with me. That's a good thing, right? To think together with me. See if you can come up with any examples of a mitzvah that has many parts to it. Yeah, Reuven.
You brought up by Pesach, Hallel, we don't make the last bracha by the Seder. And yet there's a mitzvah of Hallel.
But wait, the last bracha, what are we talking about, the last bracha? Baruch Atah Hashem Mahal
B'Tishbachos.
What does it say there? Melech Mulah B'Tishbachos?
Yes.
So why is that?
We don't make the bracha.
Wait a second. Let me ask you a question.
Right.
Why does Hallel have two brachas? You have the opening bracha and the last bracha. Mm-hmm. So again, that's not our subject here. Well, just like David was asking why the bracha on Tefillin Shel Rosh is al mitzvah tefillin. You know, why mention the mitzvah again? So you're asking another question. Why mention another bracha at the end of... But that has to do with Shevach Vodoya. You know, that's a whole different issue. Like, for example, Psukei Dezimra has to be sandwiched between two brachas, an opening bracha and a closing bracha. That's not Birchas HaMitzvah. You know, the Birchas HaMitzvah of Hallel comes at the beginning of Hallel, and that's it. The closing bracha has something to do with the laws that govern Birchas Shevach Vodoya. That's a whole different subject, a whole different category. I'm worried about a Birchas HaMitzvah when the mitzvah is not complete. It takes place in two stages.
How about
just 1 second? Wait, just give me 1 second. Something flew into my brain. Just 1 second. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. There's a sheet of Tosfos that to fulfill the mitzvah in the Tils Yadayim, you need what's called niguf. So drying your hands is part of the mitzvah. I was always wondering about these machines that they have today. What do they call them? The dry hand drying machines, whatever they call them. You know, would that be a key of the mitzvah of niguf? I don't know. Well, let's assume it would be. Okay.
Well, it was because,
so the question is the following. If you hold like Tosfos, that Netilas Yadayim has two parts to it. It has the mice and Netilah, when I wash my hands, and it has the mice and niguf when I dry the hands. That's a Tosfos in Chulin. Way at the end of Chulin. So yet the bracha is on the Netilah, even though Tosfos says that the mitzvah is not fulfilled until niguf. That might be an interesting. Yeah, Jerry, what was your example?
Rav Shechter told the Rav that he makes the bracha before.
Yeah, but what were you going to say?
I was going to say the suya.
Ooh, that's nice.
Let's think about that. That's two separate.
Well, let's think about that. That could be very good because the Rambam says that the mitzvah is lisa isha. So that means the mitzvah is not fulfilled until the nisuin. In fact, the Rambam is of the opinion that Minat Torah, he's not allowed to live with her until after Nisuin. That the whole Issa of Arusa Levaila is Doraisa, not like other Rishonim who say it's the Rabbanim. So it means he went through Erisin, he was Makadish and Isha, but he hasn't yet fulfilled his mitzvah, at least according to the Rambam. Shitu says the mitzvah is Lisa Esa Isha. And yet we're going to make the Bracha. So here's a case where the Bracha will include both the first Maisa and the second Maisa. The Nusach HaBracha. But the Maisa Bracha will be before the first Maisa. So before I Makadish and Isha, the Rambam says, like any other mitzvah, I have to recite a Bracha on the mitzvah of marriage. But that Bracha is going to include not only the Kiddushin, but also the Nusach. Right, and let's go through the Nusach HaBracha. Very interesting why Chupa comes first. That I never understood. But Chupa V'Kiddushin. So it means we're incorporating the Nisuin into the Nusach HaBracha. And according to the Rambam, it has to be so because the mitzvah is only complete with the Nisuin. But yet I'm going to make the Bracha before the Kiddushin. Jerry Ashkar, I owe you one. That's...
What about
that's a good point.
What about Bris Mila also?
I was thinking about Priya, where the Priya is critical. You know, you have to know Mal Velo Parak Yulo Mal. I don't know all the dinim. I'm not learning Mitzvah Mila, but yet the mitzvah, the bracha is on the Maisa Mila, even if you need Priya. So that might be another example.
So and there's two brachas.
But there, the bracha doesn't even indicate the priya. So that's not going to be. That's going to be more problematic for us. You know, we should we should have said, you know, include.
Yes, it's two brachas.
All right, Rabbi, so I'm going to let you go now because we ran out of time, but we're having fun. We haven't even scratched the surface of the sugya. And that's why I photocopied this rush for you, because so far we covered about one line of two pages of rush. Now, it's up to you guys whether you want to go through this rush. Well, if you want to leave it to me, that's up to you. But if you leave it to me, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick and choose the highlights of this rush, because I don't think we'll have the time to go through every word of the rush. But if you have a possibility of taking this rush with you or leaving it with me and I'll hold on to you till Sunday, what I'd like you to do is go over this rush if you have time, and alternatively I'll try to spoon feed you on Sunday. But what I'm going to ask you to do is bring a highlight. If not, I have a few highlights. I don't know if they work, and I want you to highlight certain things in the rush. And I promise you, believe that if you learn this sugya well, it will take you very, very far, because these issues that the Rush is gonna address are basic issues that'll come up over and over and over again. He defines mitzvahs. Okay then, so I'll wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos. What is it? Parsha Shmos, right? So we start a new book on Shabbos.
A new chapter.
So Lee Neder, if anyone's around at 10:40, we'll have a shiur today.